This is my first treasurer's report to you. Appreciate the opportunity. It's colder up here. It's snow. Does that, everybody feel the cold up here? It's you're right under the air conditioning vent. Okay. Hoping to get warm. The income I sent out to you earlier, obviously we're doing below budget a little bit. Not as bad as I would.
Yes, it could be.
And I've got another sheet here that I'm sending around so you can look at some of the numbers as we talk about them. I'm sure the camera would like me to stay by the mic and look at the camera. Front and back, I think. Well, it's coming. There's another one coming.
Yeah.
Oh, well, you got the original.
That's all right.
I got the original.
Yeah. Should be one page front and back. The original had two pages. This is the profit and loss budget versus actual. I printed off of the QuickBooks. There's a few things in there I've got to figure out myself, but we'll look at the numbers. Current position, we're about 42.3% through the year. If you look at the numbers, profit and loss versus actual, the budget is up to this year to date. So your percentage there, 93.2%, like on the first line, isn't 92.3% or 93.2% of the whole year. That's just 93.2% of where the budget is budgeted to date. And this was done on December 2nd. So actually you're running under the expenses or under income if it's below 100. If it's above 100 on expenses, you're running over expenses. There's one thing that that hit me that I saw here under expenses, about halfway in the middle of page 7, that's what it's called on the report. Anointing and counseling, we have some pretty expensive oil, $680,000. I think that's part of the it's part of pastoral care, but I'm not sure why the accounting thing is saying what it's saying. So I'll have to look that number up for you, because a couple other areas where it should be divided out are not. Yes.
There's supposed to be two sheets on the spreadsheet.
Front and back? You don't have front and back?
I don't have front and back.
Okay.
I'm taking two.
Okay. Actually, I had Charles do some more, and I guess his was two pages. Mine's one. I guess I had them both together.
Okay.
So if you got one that has front and back, you have both of them.
Yes,
one will say page 7, one will say page 8 then.
Okay.
Wonder what all the question marks were. Yeah. I'm trying to print out these reports. They're massive reports. Page 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 are the running across the page things that don't know the totals, so that's why it's 7 and 8 on that. Again, our contributions up through the December 2nd, $5,990,550. We budgeted $6.4 million. Again, our annual budget in general contribution around $16.3 million. The total budget for the year is for all income is $23,250,000. So if we continue at a negative 7% somewhere in that neighborhood, we're looking at a shortfall of $1.5-2 million. So we will have to address what we do. The expenses, if you look at the total on page 8, total expenses 96%. We're actually a little under on expenses. There's a few things we haven't finished. All the accounting, the boxes that come with the feast, we haven't finished logging in all those. Although all the second tithe allotment, all the major expenses are there, there's still some more expenses to be logged in that wouldn't be on the port yet. I'd like to thank Jason for his help. He told me the feast time was a bad time to change his treasurer because all the feast things, all the numbers, all the packages come in, and you have to do a lot of login, which I hadn't been that familiar with. So we're still working with that. So expense-wise, we're spending okay, although we need to, if we're going to look at the budget shortfall, we'll need to possibly cut some things, or at least discuss where we should cut. And the administration will be looking at anything that we might need to cut. The biggest area of concern, obviously, is the healthcare area, because that's one that's going to hit us pretty hard, in the sense that everybody's getting older, and also the stress of the conditions that we're under right now. The things that are happening aren't good for general health, and so we'll be looking at that. Again, the questions on these things.
Where is health care?
Health care is under premiums and claims. And at the moment, it's sitting at it looks like it's under budget, but actually there's a couple claims sitting out there that haven't been registered yet. Again, anytime we have a major problem, we have one case right now, it's another $110,000, just like that. So every time you get a health case, we self-insure. I mean, you get a check. When you turn in your bill, you get a check from the insurance company. The insurance company turns around and sends us a bill, and we pay it. Everyone up to $110,000. Okay, so we are pretty much self-insured, almost totally. I mean, just the very, very few people each year meet that criteria where the insurance actually gives back money. And we have one case that's several hundred thousand dollars over that. Thankfully, the insurance has covered that part of it. But it raises some other questions that we'll have to discuss as well. But some of those, because they involve people, we'll do an executive session. Although generically, I'll discuss it in a couple other lines here. But the position of the church is not dire in the sense that we're expenses and income are matching to a large extent. It's just where it goes from here and what happens. You know, it's a work of faith. We're definitely in a work of faith, and that's where this has to be. But basically, there's some shifting, obviously, with some of the subsidies that aren't going out now. There's other expenses and costs to serve the churches in those areas, and they're offsetting. So some of the expenses that aren't normal. Again, we're entering a non-normal time until everything is solved with some of the various crisis situations that we're in. Again, I would like to know the numbers more than I had. I told Jason I'd love to have had the 3 years of internship that he did in this job, but I'm learning and figuring out where everything is, and we're trying to look at reports that we need, not any things that would really help each of you to understand the financial situation as well as myself. So, again, that's where we are. We'll be trying to give you the weekly reports as they are. Some of the weekly reports, actually right now what Connie sends you on the actual income coming in is a more accurate picture until we catch up with all the paperwork on that. Chris Anderson.
I'll take care of that now.
Sent the final things. Every year there's changes in the law in our thrift ban of 403B. And these
look exactly the same.
Just send that one around that way. They're not. One's the thrift plan, one's the 403B, but they're all the same information. Okay, so I'll set it the same way. This doesn't change in any way that it works for us, but we need to approve it before the year end. So, and there's a resolution at the top of it. There's no reason not to approve it in the sense that but the government each year comes up with things, like in this case, there's so many people serving the military. One of the big parts of this is that if you, in active duty, have 401Ks and 403Bs or thrift plan, you're allowed to take it early without penalties and things. Well, none of us are serving in the military that I know of in the ministry or members, so I doubt that it applies to us, but it has to be in our statement. So these are things that are required by the government to put in, and it really doesn't affect us other than the fact that we have to be in compliance with the requirements. So, again, the changes basically in this one here are in the last paragraphs of distributions, number 11 on page 2. Again, I can read the summary things to you. If you go to the third page, is yours front and back? It should be the third page on yours then, or the second page, first side. HEROES Earning Assistance and Relief Tax Act of 2008, the HEART Act. That's what it's called. And I don't know that I need to read this to you. Why don't you go ahead and read it to yourselves? I'll give you a minute or two because it's obvious what it is. There's two. One says thrift plan, one says 403B. They're basically the same thing. It's just that we have to do them for both sets of documents. So if you've read one, you'll understand the other one's the same. Question?
No. Are you asking us to read on the annuity plan?
Either one of them. Either one. Because they're both going to the backup's going to be the same on both. Gerald?
Are you going to go ahead and do that right now, or are you going to later on let you...
Well, if they want to study it, they can. If you want to study it and come back to this, Mr. Chairman, do you want to do that? I mean, they're pretty simple, but...
Boilerplate, they're done.
Yeah, it's a boilerplate thing. I just don't want anybody to feel like we're running anything past them. The note at the bottom, at the second page, as amended by the HARD Act, Code Section 414U, parentheses 9, provides that a participant who dies or becomes disabled while absent from work due to military service may receive any additional plan accruals or contributions that he would have been entitled to if he had been reemployed by the employer. The revision is optional and is not included in the attached amendment. That's one section. But all these have to do with that HARD Act, which is mostly is war-related. But there's so many people in reserve right now that are being called up from their jobs that we have to put it in our plan. So if you want more time on that, we can do that. It doesn't change anything that we're doing. It doesn't change the match. It doesn't change the amounts. It doesn't change what you can put in or take out. But it meets the requirements. So, Chairman, you want us to go ahead and do the resolution? You want me to let people read it? And
I have no objection, by the way, to the amendment proposed.
So there's no legal objections to the amendment? Did we get it done? Anybody object? Okay, we're unanimous. Let's do the thrift plan first. 403B thrift plan amendment. Let me read it to you. Whereas the Council of Elders, also known as the Board of Directors of United Church of God International Association, the employer, assembled in a meeting this 6th day of December 2010, and whereas the employer established the 403B thrift plan, parentheses the plan, to provide retirement benefits for employees of the employer, and whereas the employer has the right to amend the plan pursuant to the provisions of the plan, and whereas the employer desires to amend the plan to comply with the Emergency Economic Stabilization Act of 2008, the HEROES Earnings Assistance and Relief Act of 2008, and the Work, Retiree, and Employer Recovery Act of 2008, now therefore it is hereby resolved that the attached plan amendment, a copy of which is attached and made part of this resolution, is hereby adopted, effective as of the date indicated therein. All other provisions and conditions of the plan remain unchanged, and Dennis Luker, President, Aaron Dean, Treasurer, or Gerald Seelig, Secretary, officers of the employer, are hereby authorized and directed to make such further action as may be necessary, appropriate, and advisable to effectuate the foregoing resolution. So I propose that resolution. Do we have a second? Mario Seelig seconds it. All those in favor? Questions?
Discussion.
Excuse me. I've been doing this long enough. I should know that.
Why is it that it's 2008 that we're just getting to that? Is it just a matter that it's taken that long?
It works through
the pipeline.
It works through the pipeline bureaucracy. Okay. That's when they initially introduced it.
Yep, stop. Yeah, Harry, it has to do with it's Congress that did this, Roy, and they backdated it back to those dates, and we must comply with that.
They backdated it,
and so we now have to comply with the dates that they established.
They do lots of things. They print money. I wish we could do that too. They won't let us. But that's why it's 2008. It's just
something that actually says 2007.
On the other one, I should look back to 2007.
Okay. Any more discussion? We're waiting for the new government to come. If Christ would return, it would solve all these problems. Okay, those in favor? Those opposed? Those abstaining? Unanimous? Okay. 403B, Tax Deferred Annuity Plan Amendment. Again, if you want to look at the page, it's the same thing. So I'll read the motion. Whereas the Council of Elders, also known as the Board of Directors of the United Church of God International Association, the employer, assembled in a meeting the 6th day of December 2010, and whereas the employer established the 403B tax-deferred annuity plan, the plan, to provide retirement benefits for employees of the employer, and whereas the employer has the right to amend the plan pursuant to the provisions of the plan, and whereas the employer desires to amend the plan to comply with the Emergency Economic Stabilization Act of 2008, the HEROES Earnings Assistance and Relief Act of 2008, and the Work, Retiree, and Employer Recovery Act of 2008. Now, therefore, it is hereby resolved that the attached plan amendment, a copy of which is attached and made part of this resolution, is hereby adopted, effective as of the dates indicated therein. All other provisions and conditions of the plan remain unchanged, and Dennis Luker, President, Aaron Dean, Treasurer, or Gerald Seelig, Secretary, officers of the employer, are hereby authorized and directed to take such further action as may be necessary, appropriate, or advisable to effectuate the foregoing resolution. Any discussion? Yes.
I think it would occur that the description of the plan is discretionary retirement assistance rather than retirement benefits.
Which line is that?
Second line, whereas provide discretionary retirement assistance.
Well, the 403B, they have to just elect to do it themselves. That comes out of their own salaries, not the thrift plan. So, I mean, it's discretionary in the sense that they put their own money into it. So do we need discretionary in that one?
It's all because we can withhold the matching anytime they want to.
But this isn't the match. The thrift plan, the first one, was the match.
Yeah.
This one's not matched at all. So in that sense, it's not discretion. I mean, it's in anybody's discretion. There, some people are not even in it. Some are. So that'd be my question. I mean, it's the resolution. We can put discretionary, but it's the individual's discretion whether they do a salary reduction agreement for the 403B. As this is, the thrift plan is the only matching plan.
Okay, so the 403B thrift plan is not the matching.
Thrift is the matching. This is the tax-deferred annuity plan. We did the thrift plan first.
All right.
You probably wanted to change it in that one.
I guess I read over that part. But it is, at least for the 403B thrift plan, it is a discretionary retirement assistance plan that we can withhold the matching part at any time.
We don't match anything in the 403B. We only match the thrift plan, the first resolution. So all those that only are doing the match, they're in the thrift plan. It's under the 403B, but it's the thrift plan portion. This tax-deferred annuity is not part of the thrift plan, this particular one.
Okay.
It's two sections.
Aaron, could you explain what you mean by
the thrift plan
annuity here?
It's just a tax-deferred annuity. They call it a tax-deferred annuity because you put income in tax deferred, which means you don't pay tax now. So you defer it until you need to take it. You can start taking it at age 59 and a half if you choose to take it without penalty. At age, the way it says, the year in which you turn 70 and a half, you have to start taking it out. At that time, you can take a lump sum, but you must take it either in lump sum or annuitize it over your life expectancy. And there's a chart that says how long you're supposed to live. And they actually give you a few more years than that because they know you can use it up. So they call it a tax-deferred annuity because most people put it in until they retire, then they take it out in equal payments over their lifetime. And that's what an annuity is. Annuity is something where you put equal payments in or take them out. And so that's why the 403B is called a tax-deferred annuity, although you can elect to take the whole thing out at one time, which wouldn't be annuitizing it, per se, in a financial sense. But most people would, because the problem would be if you put in, over time, a couple $100,000, you take it out all at once at age 70, you're going to pay tax on a huge income, where you'd rather take $20,000 a year and pay no tax over several years. Yes?
If you're still employed at, you said, 70 and a half, do
you're
you
still
have to do that? You're still working and employed?
Yeah. Even if you're employed, yeah. You have to start taking it out. And the funny thing is, I think you can actually put it in. I think you can actually put money in, too, and still take. So it may have come out the math, especially since you've got all these old people in your family that live to 90, 100. The math may come out that you can put in more and only have to take out less. And that's true. So there are some people that can put in $20,000 and they're forced to take out 10 or 12, which is kind of foolish, but that's the way the law works. So that's the way life is. Is that government?
Can that decision ever be changed? In other words, if you're doing the annuity part, can you at some point say?
Oh, you can. If you're doing the annuity, you can always take your money. So if you're doing, and it's just that the math will say, if you have $400,000 in there, they'll say you're going to live 16 years, and they're going to make you take, you know, I've got to calculate, they'll do this, they're going to make you take $3,000 a month. But if 5 years into it, or 3 years, or one, you say, hey, I want some money, you can take more of it. At that point, then, if you took a lump sum, so let's say you took $200,000, and you still had, you know, $200,000 left, they would annuitize that for your life expectancy and change the amounts you'd have to take. So at any time, you can add, well, if you want to buy a car, you could take $30,000, buy a car, and then the math for the next year would change to what your life expectancy and that number would be. But the annuity programs, when you do it, they will tell you what it is.
Who notifies the employee when they reach that point?
I mean, I suppose, I don't know that anybody has.
Does Chris Anderson
tell them?
Responds, lets them know.
Anybody over 70 in here that's 70 and a half?
He didn't let me know.
Maybe you're gonna
I may be approaching this.
You're in big trouble.
I know. We're going to have to remind you.
Oh, that's there's a lot of things like that that I've been asking questions of. Who does this? In fact, I get emails to the Human Resource Department. I finally sent a memo out last week saying, please respond who gets this email, because I don't know necessarily who has all these emails, and to find out who gets them. Because if it's just coming to me, then I'm going to send it to all the people that I think should know about it. But if it's coming to them already, I don't want to double up their mailboxes. So I'm learning a lot of things on the fly on how these things work. And that's one I need to write down right there. Thank you for bringing that up, because we definitely need someone to notify people of what the laws are. I've known the law, but I taught it to 18 to 22-year-olds at college, and that was a long ways off for them. But that was a long ways off for us 40 years ago, too, wasn't it? Sadly. Okay.
This would not be something that Britt Taylor would be involved in.
Britt could, but Chris has all the numbers and he handles the annuity. I would assume that he would be the one that could advise people on whether they should take more or less. I mean, they'd call me too, but I'd rather they call him. Because the key will be for me or him is say, okay, this is how much you're getting. This is where the tax brackets are. You probably will ought to take this much or less. Like I always tell people, if you're getting money free with tax, take all you can. But if once you reach that point where you're not getting anything free and you're paying tax on it, then you're better off to push that into another year. And of course, if the tax brackets change, who knows where they're going to be with the debt we're piling up. It's a tough analysis right now. And that's one of the things I did when I taught it. It's really hard to analyze. In fact, I was listening to a show on the TV last week that said they were talking about whether you should put your money from an IRA into a Roth IRA. And again, if you know the difference between a Roth IRA, you put money in now, you pay tax on it, but everything you take out is not taxed. An IRA, you put money in without tax, and then when you take it out, it's all taxed. And they're saying that people are putting in Roth IRAs right now, but they're not necessarily recommending that depending on the time frame you have for the growth, because the tax laws are in such flux right now, and what the brackets are in such flux, that they're not sure whether you're wiser. And there is, if you're 20 years away, there is a pretty good likelihood you pick one or the other. But if you're 10 years away or less, advisors, you have some arguing one, some arguing the other. But that would be something that Britt and I could talk about. But definitely, we need to notify people that are coming up on 70 of what those requirements are, because you're forced to take it at that point. And like I said, it's annuitized. But if you're still working, you can put money in. And it may be when you first turn 70 that you can put more in than the law requires you to take out. And you can't just say, well, I'm going to put in 10 and the law requires 8, so I'm just going to do 2. You have to put in the 10 and take back the 2. I mean, it has to be an actual change. So they may change the law, too. Social Security, they may move the age, because they're trying to move Social Security age up. So it's possible they could push that requirement of 70 off too. Again, that's not in our hands. Our hands is to know what it is and change to fit. Yes?
Aaron, there's also been even rumblings by some extreme to take all that money completely away from individuals, put it into the government, take away all the IRAs, all the annuities, all the 403Bs, and completely take it away from people.
Yeah, they've talked confiscation.
Yep,
and that it was done before. They confiscated gold. I mean, there's anything could happen. In that case, you should take all your money the minute you turn 70 and a half so you could spend it and enjoy it. Otherwise, the government might take it and spend it.
What kind of a law do they have to pass to do that?
they really think there's any chance under this
president. Executive orders can do that, and the president. Well, we're still under the war power. When they passed the executive orders, it was because we're a state of war. When they did that in the 1930s, they have never declared the U.S. not in a state of war. We are still in a state of war from the War Powers Act. And they did that so they could keep the executive orders.
When you got the gold, they confiscated all the gold in the country.
I mean, there'd be a lot of hue and cry, and there'd be a lot of things. I mean, but considering biblical prophecy and the Great Tribulation, any of these things could possibly happen. It's like I tell people, he who has the gun makes the rules, basically. I mean, all these scriptures, one of the things I told my class in Proverbs, it says, the hand of the diligent will never know need. I said, well, the Jews are very diligent, but look what happened in World War II. So if someone has the power physically, I mean, land rights only mean something if you have laws. All rights only have something if you have laws that people obey. The world is going to be subject to some different laws. We all know that from prophecy. So all we can tell right now is what's happening right now. And I wish I could crystal ball. It's very hard for me anymore, even with investment advice and things, people talking to me to answer them, because you don't know, because it's moving so fast. Anyway, that's a different subject. Don't want to get into an education lecture here on finance. The 403B tax for annuity plan, then, we need to take a vote on that. Discussion.
Second.
Need a second? For holiday seconds. Okay. All those in favor? All those opposed? Any abstain? Unanimous? Thank you for that. We'll put that into our policy and comply with the government. One thing I have is point three, or discussion on when to use reserves. We did a great discussion on how to get reserves and have them and to have that 10 weeks. We have never been in a position where we've had a good discussion on, I mean, do the reserves live there forever? If the income drops, what can we do? We've had periods of times of a few weeks in the past year or two that we've been under that level at the low point. Again, our policy was to be at 10 weeks at the lowest point of the year, and we're not that way through the time reaching up to the policy. We were above it for a year, but then we've had a couple weeks where we're below it because our holiday income isn't evenly spread. And so that lowest point in the year in June, I would imagine this year it's very possible we could be below it for 2 or 3 weeks easily too. The question is, if you have a drastic cut in income, do you automatically just shut down everything, or do you go ahead and keep the budget and then lower it the next year and then decide how you want to build back your reserves, or do you want to do it another way? That's something we can study and come back with some suggestions, but the awkward part is, obviously, you're not in compliance with your policy if your income goes down. But I mentioned this when we first made the reserve policy, you know, what's reserves? You know, if I have any money in a 403B and I have absolutely no money and can't buy food and I'm 52 years old, I'm not going to tell my family, you got to wait till I'm 59 so you can eat. I'm going to use the money. So the question is when do we use any of that money? And again, not to do big special program, not, but just to function. That would be the question I would have. Comments? Yes, Mike.
Yeah, to me, the very term reserves means it's for emergencies.
Yes.
If you have a drop in income and you can't make your budget, you can't pay salaries or whatever, that's pretty much a definition of use for reserves, at least how I would think.
Yeah. But the question is, we could, the minute we see everybody under it, then start cutting things.
Well, yeah.
The question I did this report when we did the reserves a long time ago. I did a report that on spreadsheets that how long we could last if the income dropped 5%. And I kept the budget the rest of the year. Then I said, okay, we budget 5% lower. Then if it drops another 5%, went the rest of the year. And then I did that with 5%, 10%, 15%, 20%, because our income shouldn't go to zero overnight. But the key is, obviously, is if it dropped during the year, and I didn't put this into my spreadsheet that I did 8-9 years ago, you'd probably start scaling back during that year as well. But I just said, how long can we last if, and just ran it to the end of the year so I can do the math easier. So I can do some more of those numbers and come back and we can talk about it. But the question I ask then is from the standpoint of policy, if we go below that number, what do you direct the administration to do? in that sense, or when we see we're going to be below it a little bit. We will obviously, I mean, we can keep the budget because it's approved by the GCE, and we can do that. And since it's budgeted, we can use reserves to make sure we do what they approved. Or we can say, let's be more prudent and see if there is extra things we can cut and take it down to be in better shape for the end of the year. But the thing is the administration, I know, wants to be in compliance with the council wishes, as do I. So those are the things that the GCE says, this is what I want you to do by the budget. At the same time, if the income doesn't match it, so I know they'll be understanding as well. But I'd like a feeling from the council itself on how much I should panic if we go down in income. Mr. Robert.
In what you've offered us today, I think you're saying that we're at this point in the year, the fiscal year, are we minus 6.8? Is that a fair?
7.6 right now on the income. Yeah.
Down.
Yes.
Okay. With all income.
Yes.
Was it
taken into
6.8
account?
6.8 just in the first income, or
that's all the cash flow in is 7.6 right now. It was 6.8 in the other report, but
we're in the December meetings. Last year, during these meetings, we were already gearing ahead towards defining a budget for the GCE to approve. That's where we were last year this time. I think, and the reserves right now, just to make sure we're not mistaken, they were under, but you say they are intact now? Am I hearing right or wrong?
No, anytime after a holiday offering, we're above our reserves.
Okay. Just want to verify.
Come June or July.
That's my premise then.
Yes.
Okay. Certainly the reserves are not a sacred trust. We don't want to elevate them too high. But that at the same time, it's better to have a bird in the hand rather than two in the bush. And I know a lot of policy effort and a lot of your team's efforts and the former treasurer's efforts were to move that there. I think it's better to, just personally, I think it's better to have a sliding scale trying to make any and all adjustments without touching those reserves to save that for a rainy day. Sometimes you think you see a rainy day and then it really gets rainy, And I think that's yours and Mr. Luker's responsibility and your administration to have that sliding scale quarter by quarter to keep the board up to date, make those adjustments along the way. If we need to make serious adjustments in February, we've done that before since I've been on, I think that then we need to do that. You think of that old proverbial lockbox with Social Security, which really did not exist. It's a term that's long gone, but you do kind of want to have where we're established and we're dealing with a smaller income to really kind of lock that and really just keep that out for that proverbial rainy day. And sometimes it's not proverbial, it will come upon us. I'd say sliding scale adjustment.
Okay. And like I said, we still have the land, and that's what took us cash down a lot too. So there are things we can look at. That was one of the things that we talked about but we didn't include in the past was the fact that we took $1.6 million in reserve, basically, and bought the land. And so until we sell it, if the land sells, then we'll be back up above. And the definition of what is reserve, we've set the policy as cash reserves. So therefore, the land is not cash as such. I mean, obviously, you could borrow against it, but we were hoping that it would sell, but we want a decent price. I mean, the land's there. Somebody broke into the house and stole some of the copper air conditioning coils and things out of it last month. So, there's still that element out there. But the house isn't worth a whole lot, and whoever buys the land will tear it down, so it's not really part of the price tag. But it's sad to see people go in and destroy property anyway. So that's another asset that we have. So the things we can curtail. We've cut down. Last year we cut ourselves down. This council has done a really good job in keeping expenses down for itself. But we're getting down to the lean part of the church where we start cutting now. We're starting to hit muscle more than there's not fat in the budget for this year. Question?
Yeah. Well, just a couple of comments. One, I know we talked to Jason, the council did, about putting together some type of a cuts. How would we proceed? Was there any of that left over? Did he ever get into that?
No. Yeah, we didn't really get into that. He was happy not to have to get into that.
Okay.
I wasn't that happy to step into that, but there are.
But I was going to say, I agree with Robin that we should have cuts by increments. You know, as you mentioned, maybe a 5% and 10%. And I think what we would have to do is set priorities. If we cut 5%, what could we cut?
Yes.
You know, try to take the things that are going to be least harmful to the work. If we start cutting 10-15%, like you say, you're going to start getting into muscle. And you know, what is less vital? Obviously, we want to take care of the churches, hopefully the ministry, but would there ever come a point where we have to start cutting back? We've done it in the past, cut back expense. You've asked men not to spend as much, or you know, think of ways to save. So, to me, setting those priorities, I do know that we've ended years in the past in a budget by only having spent maybe 95% of what we said we were going to spend. And so there was money to roll over. And it wasn't something deliberate, just happened that way. So, in essence, we've done that to a certain extent. So my recommendation would be the same thing. For the administration to come up with a plan on increment cuts, setting priorities you could recommend to the council, things that could be cut, and you know, we would then discuss it and all agree, you know, what we think would be important to keep, what could be.
Yeah, that, obviously that's a council priority decision. Administration will make suggestions, but the council decides. Yes?
A couple of questions. Number one, if we continue at 7.5% under, what we're really talking about is for the next 6 months, we're essentially talking about 15%. Is that correct? Because we're talking about 7.5% for the whole year. But if you only do that in the last 6 months of the year,
we're only looking
to cut that back.
We're only looking at the budget for 6 months, and we're comparing 7.5% to that budgeted part of the income.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is if it stays, we haven't made any budget cuts up to this point in time.
Right.
So any budget cuts are going to have to take into consideration. We're cutting that 7.5% for the whole year, right? Based on whatever we have left in the year.
Yeah, you can't cut money that you already spent.
That's what I'm
yeah, that's where. Okay, I see
that's
where you're going with that.
Yes. The question I have too.
But it's not 15%. It would be 15% for 6 months.
15% of the last 6 months.
For 6 months, yes.
Yeah.
If you try to get down to that,
right.
Provided we're blowing expenses a little bit too.
That's
so
the other question I had. Looking at this,
we're okay with
these. Looks like we're almost as far below as expenses as we are on budget.
Yes.
And do we know how we're looking? Maybe you can't answer this, or maybe Gerald can answer it better. I don't know. But, you know, are we current on expenses as far as we know? I mean, we don't know any large outstanding expenses that we expected that haven't come in yet, but we know they are coming.
The only ones are health care.
Yeah.
And a little bit of the fees, but again, it's the local part of it, not the big item ticket.
Yeah.
So it may be a chunk of change, but it's not.
So we don't have any large encumbered expenses that we know are coming in that haven't appeared yet.
No.
So this is fairly accurate in as far as under budget on both.
Yes. Yeah, it's everything that's in the books right now.
Yeah. Right,
it's there. The healthcare things come a month or so later. That's the big ticket item there. But also we're trying to set the budget for next year because, like Robin said, in February we have to approve a budget 2% to the GCE. So at that point we got to guess where the income's going to be. And again, it's really awkward now because there's so many things. We had subsidies over South America, and we're using some of that for travel to take care of the people there as well. And we have, it's a mix and match right now. So it's a bit of a scramble trying to figure it all out where everything is. But from the standpoint of where the books and what we're paying, we're coasting along on that number.
I think what Robin said, we have to do some looking at, okay, how much can we cut back now, and what do we need to look at cutting back now, and making sure that we can try to keep it in line. And I think the sooner we can get started on it, the better off we're going to be, because it's going to cost us more if we wait on it.
And no question. That's a scary issue. And again, my biggest fear still is the government taking away the benefits for the ministerial housing allotment, things like that. That always scares me every year. And it's not too friendly. Yes.
Yeah, a point, and I guess also
working with you as the chairman of the Strategic and Finance Planning Committee, is that as perhaps this is going to be pushed off to February, I would really hope, and just maybe, John, into Melvin's mind, in your mind, that we meet as a committee, mm-hmm. and also that we also have perhaps a teleconference, even if it's a teleconference before, so we really have, as 12 individuals, a real mind and knowledge of this before we hit, when we have something passed out in February. I would hope that we could really
yes.
get into that earlier, even if it's a teleconference, so all of our heads are on it.
Well, we can meet during this meeting.
Good.
In the evening, lunches sometime.
But and, even as we move forward to February, that we'll next
need,
quarter, that we can
we'll
have a
that.
Full teleconference on, if that would help us.
Yeah. Well, we need all the input. Okay. That's, again, something we'll be working on as administration for you. Fourth point, I have general retirement guidelines. Do the economics mean we should reassess portions of the program? Not in the sense of retiring people, but there is more discussion in accounting circles now about, you know, we had that the thing when we did our program, it was the accounting people said that retirement is need. Well, the government, well, Enron happened right after that. Other things that happened after that. We don't ask any questions of anybody that goes into retirement. It may be, we may be wise at some point in time to ask some simple questions. I mean, whether it's asked for a tax return for someone, so at least you say you saw something that, yeah, they're not rolling in money, and you did it because I'm down the road. The government's getting stricter on these things, and the accountants are not as easily flowing to what you would like them to say because they're protecting themselves now more than they are their customers. So that I just mentioned that from the standpoint of like I said, we do things with our discretionary widows and people. They have to say what they have and fill out forms. I don't want to make our ministers fill out all those forms, all your assets, and like that. But it may be we ask for something like a tax return. We see it, shred it, and then we can say we saw, yes, they don't have, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars coming in. They do need that, and so therefore it's not something. Because if you have a case where anybody has lots of money, you know, inherited millions of dollars or something, and you're paying them discretionary need money, you can end up hurting the program for everybody else. And that's one thing that I don't think we have a lot of people. I think the needs would be real easy. And again, I'm not going to ask people everything they own, all the things. I don't like that form for our ministers. Don't want to be invasive. But the question I have, yes, Mr. Darden.
Well, we'll need to discuss that, Aaron, because we are very careful in our last retirement policy to avoid the use of the word assistance. Being discretionary assistance and according to need for that very reason.
Yeah. But then we come up to where it starts approaching, even though we say it's not defined benefit plan, if we describe it the way it's described, it does look like a defined benefit plan.
Yeah, well, that's what we call it discretionary assistance because it's not funded, you see.
Yeah.
But I think we may run into a little trouble if we start saying that this is dependent on need.
Okay.
So we would discuss that.
Okay. We need to discuss it because, like I said, I want to make sure we're in compliance and we don't cost ourselves any problems. Number five, the Texas property, it's still there. And the market's still – actually, the Texas market's holding fairly well as a market, but no one's doing massive development to where it's raising prices and everybody's looking for a steal still. So hopefully that will continue. And they're still building the Walmart there. They're still doing some of those things. Yes.
Aaron, you mentioned somebody stolen some stuff out of the house. The house isn't worth that much, and if they're stolen some stuff out of the house, would it be to our benefit? Maybe not. I don't know. Just thought occurred. Would it be to our benefit to have someone living in that house on the property, even if we just, you know, let them live there free as a quote caretaker, just to make sure the property's, you know, that there's somebody on the property and people aren't driving in and ripping off fences or ripping off or tearing things up or doing all kinds of other problems?
Well, there is the cattle there. We are grazing it. So we have the someone grazing on there. No one's living in the house. I had a man actually write me and ask to rent it. And so I passed that on to Chris Anderson and for the insurance standpoint, what that would do or not do. And see, a little music that caught me in. Mr. Darden.
I have been in that house. Such a dilapidated state, it would take quite a bit of repair to make it really livable.
Yeah.
And we're allowing the person who's running his cattle to use it as a storage shed, pretty much. it's not worth enough really to worry about.
Well, the man that wrote me, and I wrote a letter drafted back to him, he wrote me and asked, and he said, well, I see it's running down, and it'd be good for you, because I go in there and I'll help fix it up, and you can, and it'll take care of it. But the key is, it's not really a rental. And the problem I would have with that is that someone would move in there and say it's not a legal renter, because a legal renter has to have certain things. I found that when I rented my house. When people quit paying, they ripped out the screens, and then they came to court and said it wasn't a legal rental, so I had to put screens back in. I had to do this. So you could end up in a bigger problem trying to rent it in the condition it's in than you would otherwise. Robin?
When I was up in Ontario for the feast, we had some Texans up there. I said, oh, you're from Texas. And where are you from in Texas? And I said, from Denton. I said, oh, you're from Denton. I said, I know where that is now. And and maybe some of you that are in Texas know it. Actually, just if there's any welfare in looking over the cattle on the grass or whatever's down there, is that we have a member that says, I look at it every day. It's out my window. A guy lives, maybe you Texans know who it is. The guy lives right across the street from our property.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Like I said, you didn't see the people stealing the stuff, so.
Well, I mean, it's just a thought. Maybe somebody in Dallas or Fort Worth knows who the guy is.
Yeah, all I know is I got the one letter is all.
Yeah.
Mr. Darden?
We should remember the whole purpose we have in running cattle on it is to keep our agricultural exemption.
Yes.
Instead of paying $30,000 a year, we pay $3,000 a year. And so... We're not out to make any money on the place. I think we're only getting a couple $100 from this rancher.
It's a savings. Yeah, that's exactly it. Savings. And if and even if you did rent the house, you'd still be running cattle. But the whole thing's exempt now. If you put some in the house, they may block off a couple acres and say it's worth more, and we wouldn't necessarily have an exemption on that. So the key is it's. As nice as it sounds to have some money coming in or something, in that case we'd be losing money. We'd be making pennies to lose thousands.
I wasn't thinking about money, but I was thinking the other, but that's good.
Yeah,
good.
But anyway, that's where it is. We still own it, and I keep praying every day for someone to have the need to buy it.
Ready? Has there been any interest expressed at all in the last 3 months?
No. That time of year is pretty slow for developers. Are still the problem is the banks aren't loaning any money. There are people that would like to build things, but until the banks loan money. You know, like all of us, we'd like to buy a house, but if nobody will give you the money, if you have income, the banks have more profit in taking money from the Federal Reserve for free and loaning it back to the government and making a percent than they do giving it out to risk. I mean, I'd love to be in a position where I can take all the money I want for free and loan it back to the people loan it to me and make money. It doesn't make sense, but that's basically, in short form, what's going on. And the banks aren't. From what I read in different reports, the banks aren't nearly as open about what's going on as the government wants us to believe. So when that will change, I do not know. If it changes, I think the property is sellable. But till banks loan, I don't see anything moving. Okay, the other two items I have on here would be for executive session because they involve individual cases. They're one thing we do have to look at, as a church, we want to do things very godly, obviously, and very generously, et cetera. There are some issues we run into, though, in legality with our insurance and claims and things in particular. See, we have a policy if someone is terminated, they have 3 months free insurance, and then they can buy it for 9 months. Well, we have some cases where people go beyond that one-year period. Then our carriers have the right to shut us off, even. Not only just them, but also us, perhaps. So even if we want to take people beyond that sometimes and help them out, we could have a non-compliance problem with our insurance carriers. And that's an awkward thing. Also, there's stipulations there that say that the person is on active duty. And we have some people in healthcare situations for more than a year that are not active duty, and technically we're not in compliance with some of those things so those are some of the things just as a general that we need to talk about in this. We can talk about specific cases, but it's something that, boy, your heart goes out and say, well, we want to keep helping you, but do we do that to jeopardize the plan and our ability to have insurance for all of us in that sense? So anyway, that one I'll leave to the time.
How much time would you need for those two items?
Well, we're not going to make any we might make a couple decisions, so I don't necessarily need that much time. But I would think half an hour at most. We might do it shorter, just to bring up what they are.
Where's
Melvin? Right here. Chairman's up.
Address, right? 12:15?
Yes. It's almost perfect time.
So what should we do? Wait on the presentation to be finished?
I think you're finished, aren't you?
I'm done with that, except for the executives, so.
Yeah, Mr. Dean is finished, and you can come in and make your presentation. This is a surprise presentation.